You were working in your primary care clinic seeing Rhonda Hart, a 15-year-old girl with a history of Turner syndrome. She wishes to participate in her local gymnastics team and needs a form filled out. She feels well and is without new concerns. On her physical exam, her blood pressure is 142 over 88 on her right arm, and you hear a harsh systolic murmur along the left upper sternal border, which you also hear when you place the stethoscope on her back. As you consider this finding, you wonder, what do you think might explain the elevated blood pressure and murmur? And will this make it so she cannot participate in gymnastics? Consider your answers as we begin this next episode. Welcome to AudioBricks. I'm Adam Weinstein, bringing cardiology from our bricks to your ears. Let's get started demonstrating how kids are not little adults. After completing this brick, you will be able to 1. Define acyanotic obstructive congenital heart disease. 2. Describe the symptoms, clinical presentation, pathophysiology, diagnostic tests, and management of coarctation of the aorta. 3. Describe the clinical presentation, pathophysiology, diagnostic tests, and management of pulmonary valve stenosis. And 4. Describe the clinical presentation, pathophysiology, diagnostic tests, and management of aortic valve stenosis. Part 1. What are obstructive congenital heart defects? Recall that we can describe congenital heart defects as either shunts or obstructions. In this episode, we'll explore three obstructive disorders that prevent normal blood flow in the heart or the aorta: coarctation of the aorta, pulmonary valve stenosis, and aortic valve stenosis. The main clinical consequences of obstructive congenital heart defects relate to limited blood flow beyond the obstruction, which may limit delivery of oxygen to the tissues and back up the blood proximal to the obstruction, which in turn may result in congestive heart failure. Unlike disorders of shunting, such as tetralogy of Fallot, deoxygenated blood is not shunted into the systemic circulation. In other words, these obstructive congenital heart defects are acyanotic, which means they do not reduce the oxygen saturation of the arterial blood. Part 2. What is coarctation of the aorta? The term coarctation refers to a stricture or narrowing of a canal or vessel. And in the context of congenital heart defects, we are referring to a narrowing of the lumen of the aorta. Coarctation of the aorta is most often located in the descending aorta, just distal to the left subclavian artery and near the attachment of the ligamentum arteriosum, the remnant of the fetal ductus arteriosus. It is uncommon, but important to recognize that coarctation of the aorta may also be located proximal to the left subclavian artery. Coarctation of the aorta is most often a congenital abnormality and accounts for up to 5% of all congenital heart defects. It is twice as common in males as females, but is also associated with Turner syndrome. This makes me wonder if this might explain the findings we identified in our patient, Rhonda. Turner syndrome is a chromosomal abnormality in which a female has only one X chromosome. It may present with findings such as short stature, lymphatic lesions including a webbed neck and or lymphedema in feet and hands, and a horseshoe kidney. About 10 to 15% of patients with Turner syndrome have coarctation of the aorta. Let's review this with a question break. Where is the most common site of narrowing in patients with congenital coarctation of the aorta? In the descending aorta, distal to this left subclavian artery and near the attachment of the ligamentum arteriosum. Congenital coarctation of the aorta most commonly presents shortly after birth, thanks to newborn screening. Milder coarctations, meaning less tight of a stricture, may present later in childhood. The timing depends largely on the severity. Those with very mild strictures may be asymptomatic and only diagnosed when blood pressure is screened at routine health maintenance. Alternatively, those with the most severe strictures may present with such severe obstruction as the ductus arteriosus closes, the left ventricle may struggle to pump blood beyond the obstruction. This leads to signs of ischemia and poor perfusion, for example, pallor and weak pulses distal to the obstruction, and congestive heart failure proximal to it, including pulmonary edema and respiratory distress. Newborns are now screened in the nursery through assessment of the strength of femoral pulses as well as pulse oximetry in the lower extremities. Coarctation of the aorta is associated with several other congenital heart defects, including bicuspid aortic valve, ventricular septal defect, and patent ductus arteriosus. Let's sum this up with a question break. How does the severity of coarctation of the aorta differ between patients presenting with clinical symptoms shortly after birth and those presenting during childhood? Patients presenting in childhood have less severe narrowing, whereas those presenting with clinical symptoms shortly after birth have more severe narrowing and may even present in cardiogenic shock. Coarctation of the aorta is classified based on the location of the lesion as it relates to the ductus arteriosus. Recall that the ductus arteriosus is the fetal artery that connects the pulmonary trunk to the aorta. It allows fetal blood to bypass the fetal lungs and move directly into the systemic circulation. The ductus arteriosus closes soon after birth. Preductal coarctations occur proximal to the attachment of the ductus arteriosus, whereas postductal coarctations occur distal to the attachment of the ductus arteriosus. Ductal coarctations, which are the most common, arise immediately adjacent to the ductus arteriosus attachment. Coarctation of the aorta may develop congenitally due to abnormal development of the aortic arch, while it forms from the embryonic left fourth aortic arch artery. The exact cause of this is not well understood. Acquired coarctations of the aorta are rare, but they may arise in inflammatory diseases of the aorta, such as Takayasu arteritis, or in adulthood because of severe atherosclerosis. And now for a quick question break. From what embryonic structure does the arch of the aorta arise? The arch of the aorta arises from the left fourth aortic arch artery. Since coarctation of the aorta is an obstructive lesion, the main hemodynamic issue is increased resistance to blood flow through the narrowed segment of the descending aorta. This is problematic because tissues distal to the coarctation require oxygen-rich blood to survive, so the body adapts in at least one of two ways to get blood past the narrowed artery. First, the body will increase systemic blood pressure proximal to the obstruction. Higher blood pressures proximal to the aortic narrowing will increase arterial pressure proximal to the stenosis, like in the arms and the cranium. This can have impact on the child as a cause of secondary hypertension. If left untreated, patients can develop a variety of complications related to the secondary hypertension. These include left ventricular hypertrophy from increased left ventricular afterload, atherosclerosis, and cerebral aneurysms. Second, the body will develop collateral circulations using existing connected minor blood vessels that send blood around the obstructed aorta. Thoracic arteries are commonly involved in rerouting blood past a coarctation of the aorta, and they include the left subclavian, internal thoracic, axillary, and intercostal arteries. And another question break. How does the body compensate for increased resistance to blood flow in coarctation of the aorta? The body increases systemic blood pressure and develops collateral circulations. And let's make it a two-part question break. What are some complications associated with coarctation of the aorta? Secondary hypertension may lead to left ventricular hypertrophy. Coarct may also lead to cerebral aneurysms and atherosclerosis, and in severe obstructions, congestive heart failure. Coarctation of the aorta is diagnosed by a combination of physical exam and imaging studies. On physical exam, patients may be relatively normal, but most will have hypertension in the arms. Given an uncommon incidence of coarctation of the aorta proximal to the left subclavian artery, it is important to screen for blood pressure elevation in the right arm when possible. Additionally, patients would have lower systolic pressures in the lower extremities compared to the right arm, typically with a gradient of 15 to 20 millimeters of mercury or more. Cardiac auscultation may identify a systolic murmur at the left upper sternal border or below the clavicle. Alternatively, the murmur may be heard on the left side of the back near the left scapula. This does sound a lot like our patient Rhonda, doesn't it? Most patients beyond the neonatal period will not have physical exam findings of aortic obstruction because these would occur only with more severe narrowing. In a patient with more severe disease, the lower extremities may be cool to the touch because of the decreased blood flow. In neonates, the lower extremities may also appear cyanotic if the patient still has a patent ductus arteriosus, as blood will continue to shunt from the pulmonary artery to the lower pressure in the descending aorta distal to the coarctation. And now for a question break. What is the most common physical exam finding with coarctation of the aorta? The answer is elevated blood pressure in the right upper extremity. Echocardiography with Doppler is the imaging modality of choice, as it can be used to detect the aortic narrowing and estimate the severity. Chest X-ray is not required for the diagnosis, but in patients who have uncorrected coarctation of the aorta for many years, the X-ray may reveal notching of the inferior surface of the ribs, mostly noted from the third to the eighth ribs. This phenomenon is caused by the intercostal arteries, which lie in this location and erode the lower surface of the ribs as they gradually enlarge to provide sufficient collateral circulation to the lower half of the body. CT and MRI may also provide a 3D picture of the anatomic abnormalities associated with the coarctation. Although the diagnosis can be established without them, these images can be helpful in planning the appropriate intervention. The management of coarctation of the aorta depends on the severity, patient's age, and clinical presentation. In neonates with severe narrowing, surgical interventions include resection with end-to-end anastomosis and direct repair of the coarctation. While awaiting repair, prostaglandins are administered to keep the ductus arteriosus open and maintain blood flow to the lower half of the body until corrective surgery can be performed. Surgical management is ideally performed to prevent the development of systemic hypertension and its associated complications. In milder cases, and where the coarctation of the aorta was diagnosed at a later time, specifically in older children and adults, then the most common procedure is a transcatheter intervention with stenting, as this is less invasive and associated with fewer complications. Unfortunately, if the diagnosis is delayed, the procedure can improve the blood flow, but not some of the hemodynamic impacts from the long-standing secondary hypertension. Most patients in this situation may need cardiovascular monitoring and support, including antihypertensives, even after the coarctation has been repaired, because of vascular remodeling and thickening, and less ability for the blood vessels to relax to a more normal pressure on their own. Part 3. What is congenital pulmonary valve stenosis? Pulmonary valve stenosis, also called pulmonary stenosis and pulmonary artery stenosis, is a narrowing of the outflow to the pulmonary arteries, limiting blood flow into the lungs. The symptoms of pulmonary valve stenosis depend on the degree of narrowing. Mild stenosis is typically asymptomatic, and most patients with this defect have a good prognosis. Severe stenosis, however, causes significant symptoms due to a decrease in blood flow to the lungs and therefore in oxygenation. It will typically present in the neonatal period if not already diagnosed through prenatal ultrasonography, leading to symptoms of hypoxemia, such as shortness of breath and dyspnea on exertion, as well as symptoms of right-sided congestive heart failure with right ventricular hypertrophy, jugular venous distension, hepatomegaly, and edema. In congenital pulmonary valve stenosis, the valve develops with fibrosis, resulting in a thickened outflow and near fusion of the commissures. These obstructive changes in the pulmonary valve narrow this outflow tract, decreasing the amount of blood flowing into the lungs. Although it is common as an isolated lesion, pulmonary valve stenosis may coexist with other malformations. For example, it is one of the features of tetralogy of Fallot. Now, let's pause for a question break. What are worrisome symptoms from pulmonary valve stenosis? Symptoms from pulmonary valve stenosis include shortness of breath, dyspnea on exertion, and right ventricular hypertrophy and congestive heart failure symptoms. Pulmonary valve stenosis is diagnosed through physical exam and imaging studies. On physical exam, one may hear a harsh systolic ejection murmur in the pulmonic area or the left upper sternal border. the murmur often radiates to the back. Electrocardiography may show right axis deviation and right ventricular hypertrophy. Echocardiography establishes the diagnosis, severity, and the associated abnormalities. Chest X-ray may show cardiomegaly due to the right ventricular hypertrophy. And another question break. What type of murmur is commonly heard in pulmonary valve stenosis? A harsh systolic ejection murmur in the left upper sternal border, radiating to the back. For patients with significant symptoms, the malformed pulmonic valve will eventually need to be surgically replaced. Especially in neonates, prior to replacement, stenosed valves can be managed with balloon catheter dilation, in which a catheter is advanced across the valve and a balloon inflated to dilate the narrowed valve. Balloon dilation is done preferentially in children, as it is less invasive due to technique challenges in a small neonate and to delay a more permanent valve replacement in a child that is still growing. Part 4. What is congenital aortic valve stenosis? Congenital valvular aortic stenosis is a thickened aortic valve and/or adjacent aortic wall that obstructs the lumen and reduces blood flow out of the left heart into the aorta. It is sometimes associated with a bicuspid aortic valve, but it is not the same thing. Aortic stenosis in adults is more common than congenital aortic valve stenosis. It is usually due to calcification of the aortic valve with aging. Most patients with mild aortic valve stenosis are asymptomatic and may just have an associated murmur without other symptoms. With more severe stenosis, patients may have signs and symptoms of impaired left ventricular function, left ventricular hypertrophy, and left-sided congestive heart failure with shortness of breath and dyspnea on exertion. In congenital aortic valve stenosis, development of the aortic valve and outflow is abnormal, causing obstruction of the lumen of the aortic root, limiting the outflow of oxygenated blood from the left ventricle into the systemic circulation. As I mentioned, in many patients with aortic valve stenosis, the valve may be bicuspid and only have two cusps rather than the normal three. This predisposes the valve to fibrosis and calcification and worsening of the stenosis with age. Another form of congenital aortic valve stenosis occurs when a membrane forms in the aorta itself rather than the valve, causing a fixed obstruction. Much like pulmonary valve stenosis, aortic valve stenosis is diagnosed through physical exam and imaging studies. On physical exam, most patients present with a crescendo-decrescendo systolic ejection murmur at the right upper sternal border that radiates upward to the carotid arteries. In more severe cases of aortic valve stenosis, physical examination may also be notable for signs of left-sided heart failure, such as tachypnea, use of accessory muscles of respiration, and Rawls. Echocardiography establishes the diagnosis, severity, and associated abnormalities. Similar to pulmonary valve stenosis, interventions to relieve the left outflow tract obstruction are catheter-based, such as percutaneous balloon aortic valvuloplasty, or surgical, such as aortic valvotomy and valve replacement. Let's do one more question break before we start our recap. What type of murmur is commonly heard in aortic valve stenosis? A crescendo-decrescendo systolic ejection murmur at the right upper sternal border, radiating to the carotids. And that's all I have today for obstructive congenital heart defects. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. First, can you list some examples of acyanotic obstructive congenital heart defects? Coarctation of the aorta, pulmonary valve stenosis, and aortic valve stenosis are three obstructive congenital heart defects. These lesions reduce blood flow, but are acyanotic because they do not shunt deoxygenated blood into the circulation. Next, can you describe the clinical presentation and pathophysiology of coarctation of the aorta? Coarctation of the aorta is a discrete narrowing of the descending aorta near its junction with the ligamentum arteriosum. It arises in the aortic arch, while the aorta is developing from the left fourth aortic arch. Milder forms of coarctation of the aorta may present as secondary hypertension in children, but severe forms will present with symptoms of poor perfusion distal to the obstruction and congestion and hypervolemia proximal to the obstruction. Okay, can you describe the diagnosis and management of coarctation of the aorta? Diagnosis is confirmed by echocardiography, and management may include corrective surgery or transcatheter interventions and stenting. Great. Now can you describe the clinical presentation, pathophysiology, diagnosis, and management of pulmonary valve stenosis? In congenital pulmonary valve stenosis, an abnormal pulmonary valve may cause right ventricular hypertrophy and heart failure. A diagnosis is made through physical exam and imaging studies, especially echocardiography. On physical exam, a harsh systolic ejection murmur may be heard at the left upper sternal border radiating to the back. It may be managed through balloon dilation of the valve or surgical replacement. Now, can you describe the clinical presentation and pathophysiology of congenital aortic valve stenosis? In congenital aortic valve stenosis, a thickened aortic valve or a narrow outflow lumen limits blood flow out of the left ventricle and into the systemic circulation. Complications include left ventricular hypertrophy and heart failure. Congenital aortic valve stenosis may be associated with a bicuspid aortic valve. And lastly, can you describe the diagnosis and management of congenital aortic valve stenosis? A diagnosis is made through physical exam and imaging studies, especially echocardiography. On exam, a crescendo-decrescendo systolic murmur may be heard at the right upper sternal border radiating to the carotids. Congenital aortic valve stenosis may be managed with percutaneous balloon, aortic valvuloplasty, or aortic valvotomy or valve replacement. Armed with your newfound knowledge of obstructive congenital heart defects, let's revisit our patient's story from the beginning of this episode. Thinking back to your patient, Rhonda Hart, a 15-year-old with Turner syndrome found to have high blood pressure and a harsh systolic murmur along the left sternal border in the back, what do you think might explain the elevated blood pressure and the murmur? Will this make it so she cannot participate in gymnastics? To confirm your suspicions, you schedule Rhonda for an echocardiogram and confirm a diagnosis of coarctation of the aorta. You explain that before she was born, as her great vessels were forming, there was a small narrowing that formed in the great vessel that sends blood to her body, called the aorta. This was a pretty mild narrowing, so she's lived all her life to this point without being detected. You counsel that there's a procedure she will need to have to fix this, but it's very safe, and one that is very successful. It should be able to fix things up so she can participate in gymnastics once again and once all is squared away. And that's all I have for today's audio break. Thanks for joining me. If you like this episode, give it a thumbs up or a comment. You can enjoy the full Brick experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, questions, flashcards, and active learning. Stay healthy out there.